Our reading this morning is from the Reverend Victoria Safford. What if there was a universe, a cosmos, which began in shining blackness out of nothing, out of fire, out of a single silent breath? And into it came billions and billions of stars, stars beyond imagining. And near one of them, a world, a blue-green world so beautiful that learned clergymen could not even speak about it cogently. And brilliant scientists, with their physics, their mathematics, their empirical, impressionistic musing, in trying to describe it, would begin to sound like poets. What if there were a universe in which a world was born out of a smallish star, and into that world, at some point, flew red-winged blackbirds, and into it swam sperm whales, and into it bloomed crocuses, and into it blew wind to lift the tiniest hairs on naked arms in spring, and into it at some point grew onions out of soil, and in went Mount Everest and also the coyote. Into that world came animals and elements and plants and imagination, the mind and the mind's eye. If such a universe existed and you noticed it, what would you do? What song would come out of your mouth? What prayer? What praises? What sacred offering? What whirling dance? What religion and what reverential gesture would you make to greet the world every single day you were in it? When I was 12 years old, I bought 2 milking goats. Years before, my parents had raised goats, but after a while, they became overwhelmed by the twice daily milkings and moved on. I had mourned their loss, so as soon as my parents agreed I was old enough to milk twice a day, I saved my money and purchased 2 goats, one nearly ready to give birth. I raised goats until I graduated from high school. I kept goats because I loved their intelligent eyes and their soft affection and the way they mawed when they came into the barn. I liked the milk and even bizarrely at 14 loved to make cheese and yogurt. But in retrospect, I wonder if what really kept me coming back to the barn twice a year, day all year was the spring arrival of baby goats. Baby goats are pure joy. And I don't mean my joy in being with them, even though there is that, but they are pure joy unto themselves. A goat is born gooey and dazed, as are most mammals. Their mother licks them clean. They take a few staggering steps, maybe suck a little, but soon the baby goat gets it. I am alive. I am alive. I move. I breathe. I suck warm, delicious milk. There is air and ground and green grass and light. I am alive. I am alive. So she kicks up her heels in pure delight and soon is running about, leaping, hopping, jumping with the uncontained joy at the miracle of her own life. As a teenager, I felt no delight or joy in my own life. It seemed instead a burden that I must bear. How different those newborn creatures experience life, surging with the pure pleasure of existence, glad for their chance at life. How hopeful it was. What whirling dance would you make to greet the world, asked the Reverend Victoria Safford in this morning's reading, if you noticed the wonder, the remarkableness, the miracle and mystery of this life? The girl in I'm in Charge of Celebrations actually does a whirling dance when she notices the wonder of dust devils. You don't see adult people very often break into whirling dances, simply inspired by the wonder and miracle of being alive. But in the young, you do. The wild capering of baby goats, you could call that a form of whirling dance. Puppies and kittens whirl, chasing tails and string and each other. Human toddlers dance, run, laugh with so little encouragement that it seems that joy just bubbles below their skin, ready to burst forth. Even brand new human babies, unable yet to run or whirl or leap or even really smile, nurse with such a concentration that is so pure, so intense, they engage their entire bodies. Fierce joy is the essence of that act. Joy, if you pay attention to the very youngest, seems to be one of the most fundamental responses to being alive. This, in fact, is the teaching of a revered 12th century Buddhist text, the Lo Yang. It teaches that joy is our original nature. We are called back our whole lives to live in joy. Joy is wow and hallelujah. It's that feeling that surges up with such power that it wants to be expressed through the whole body with a leap, a whirl, or a shout. If we have learned a more subdued approach, a broad smile or laughter or just a strong clarifying moment of attention and pleasure and awe. Joy is also and ah. It is that feeling that swells up in quiet moments and wants to be expressed by sitting still or smiling softly or reaching out and hugging others. A tree, ourselves, and if we peel private, just a strong clarifying moment of attention and pleasure and strength. On Friday night, I was lucky enough to go see Curios, the Cirque du Soleil show currently in Portland. The music, often klezmer in style, was bright and happy, and it seemed as if all the audience sat up tall as if waiting to be asked to dance. The sets and costumes were fantastical and bizarre. The scenes were sometimes surreal, but it was all whimsical, with glimpses that could almost have been, but weren't quite, the Land of Oz, Mary Poppins, James and the Giant Peach, and Dr. Seuss. Central to each scene was the remarkable, unbelievable feats of the human body. As men and women whirled, bent, spun, flew, flipped, twisted, and balanced in ways that seemed utterly impossible, and thus absolutely marvelous. Our attention was caught. All was wow, and we gasped and held our breath. We roared approval, clapped enthusiastically, and laughed, and smiled, and smiled. It was a whirling dance. It was joy. Joy surges and swells like the tides. It is never steady, never the totality of our experience. But after joy, our emotional state usually flows back almost to where it began, happy, grieving, satisfied, struggling. The key word is almost. Change happens. On the way to Cirque du Soleil, I was so anxious and irritable in the inching lines of traffic just outside the expo center. Well, we arrived almost 25 minutes early. We didn't park until the show started. Then when we left, the traffic was significantly worse. We sat by our parking place for 10 minutes before the line of cars even moved a foot. Then no matter. The joy had flooded through us, and now we were okay, just sitting in our car, just waiting. After joy, we are more fully engaged with being alive. Joy matters. Something happens to joy, though. When we are toddlers, joy spurts up like geysers, provoked by the smallest happenings. But by the time a person is, at least a North American at this moment in history, is 13, joy is much harder to access. We don't live in a particularly joyful society for all the superficial brightness of consumer culture. 1 in 6 Americans is on antidepressant. 1/3 of Americans are chronically lonely. Addiction to opioids is so high that it's a national crisis. The daily news seems to be a litany of murder and exceptionally bad behavior. Life can be hard. We don't get the love that we need. Too much is expected of us. Meaning is fleeting. We experience pain. The unexpected crashes in, bringing illness, accidents, and ended relationships. We slog through best we can, but joy recedes, coming less often. So it takes a solar eclipse or the Cirque du Soleil to reach down and just pull it out of us. I do not think it is life circumstances that people with easier lives are more joyful than those with challenging lives. For happiness, one needs security, said Anne Morrow Lindbergh. But joy can spring like a flower, even from the cliffs of despair. and certainly she knew despair. In the worst of times, we are still alive. We are still part of this amazing earth and universe. We still have so much to be grateful for. We are meant to be joyful. And we can feel pain and joy almost simultaneously, heartbeats apart. Consider a grieving woman, a daughter whose mother has just died, and opens the door to find her sister, who has rushed across many miles to be there. And as they embrace, she feels joy. Her sister is warm and solid, well-loved, full of memory and shared pain. The woman is not alone. She is blessed. Consider a man immersed in the pain of broken bones and bruised skin and muscles from a car accident. And for a moment, out of his window, he sees the lush red of a first bloom on a red rose bush he has tended for many years and feels satisfaction and delight. He is blessed. This is no betrayal of grief or suffering. It is its complement. We are alive, so we feel pain. We are alive, so we feel joy. Sometimes, though, joy is more likely to surprise us if we hone our skills and just give it some openings. Joy is more likely to show up if we are paying attention. We have to slow down and notice things, like the girl in I'm in Charge of Celebrations. Joy doesn't happen so much when we're thinking about what to have for dinner. With a busy mind, how can we notice that perfect bright yellow dahlia in our neighbor's yard? So notice when you hug the one you love, the warmth of her body, or the smell of his hair, or the warmed touch of her fur. Notice when you step outside and feel the rush of hot summer heat. You get to do that today. And notice the particular pale blue of the sky. We can also do more things that bring us pleasure and happiness, like singing and dancing and skipping and playing and laughing and cheering someone on, giving a gift, sitting quietly in nature, saying thank you to someone who has made a difference. And we can always remember that all of this, everything, is a gift. We did not earn our lives. We did not ask to be on a planet where oceans crash against the shore, lakes glint in the sun, peaches squirt sweet juice into our mouths, and the sun rises, as the poet says, like a red flower streaming upward on its heavenly coils. It's just here. We're just here. How do we understand it, this unearned grace? And I would say, mostly, we can't. Thoughts and ideas can't touch the miraculousness of each of us being here now. So we are humble. The forces that made this world are stronger than our individual lives. We bow before them, grateful, and allow the joy to explode inside us. And what happens when we do that? What song will come out of your mouth, asked Safford? What prayer, what praises, what sacred offering, what whirling dance, what religion, and what reverential gesture would you make to greet the world every single day you were in it? If we are a baby goat, we leap. If we are a child, we whirl. As for us, let us sing. One of the ways we set up the possibility of joy is obviously to sing that song. It is also really helpful to remember to savor what is so sweet in our lives. So today we are going to celebrate chocolate and fruit communion. And we are going to practice savoring the sweet. First, we're going to begin with the responsive reading from Walt Whitman on miracles. And it is in your order of service. So we are going to divide into the left and right side. I know nothing else but miracles. Walk the streets of Manhattan,
or dart my sight over the roofs of houses toward the sky,
or wade with naked feet along the beach just at the edge of the water,
or stand under trees in the woods,
or talk by day with one I love, or sleep in bed at night with anyone I love,
or sit at table at dinner with the rest,
or look at strangers opposite me riding in the car,
or watch honeybees busy around the hive the summer afternoon,
or animals feed in the fields,
or birds, or the wonderfulness of insects in the air,
or the exquisite, delicate, thin curve of the new moon in spring.
These with rest, one and all, are to me miracles.
The whole referring and let each state in its own.
To me, every hour of the light and dark is a miracle.
Every cubic inch of space is a miracle.
Every square yard
on the surface of the earth is spread with miracles. Every foot of the interior swarms with miracles.
So you are all invited this morning to come forward and with this community savor and celebrate chocolate and fruit, two of the sweetest miracles this life offers. You will each be offered morsels of sweetness. To begin, I want you all to take a deep, deep breath and be present here and now. You are welcome here. You are so welcome here. In this congregation, in this place, on this earth, you are welcome here. You are a miracle, each and every one of you. You are made of atoms that have come from the stars. You are a child of the love of the sun and earth and air and water. You are a miracle. You are completely unlikely, unique, and wonderful. And I invite you now, each of you, each miracle, to come forward. Do not hurry. You do not need to hurry. And feel yourself on the earth where you belong. Attend to the music. Hear the rustling of your fellow travelers, their footsteps, their breath. Hear your footsteps and your breath. You will be offered fruit and chocolate. Let the blueberry or raspberry or both rest on your tongue. Feel the round flesh of them in your mouth. Bite slowly and taste the juice as it squirts into your mouth, enjoying how sweetness releases. Afterwards, hold the chocolate on your tongue and let it melt, rich, heavy, sweet. Don't bite. Just appreciate the chocolate as it dissolves in your mouth and slowly slides down your throat. Come forward now and attend to the sweet miracles of this life. So what we're going to do is we're going to go that direction down this aisle and come down this aisle to receive your fruit and chocolate and then return to your seat this way.
As we conclude our time together this morning, we extinguish the flame of our chalice, but not the warmth and inspiration of our faith, nor our commitment to its principles. These we will carry with us until we meet again.